X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Well, this is part 3. Can you believe that? Part 3, everyone, of the Ms. Jen Cruz She Squatchers interview. And so I am going to take a nice long nap after this interview is over, because I will tell you, she wore me right down to a nubbin. Jen has an awful lot of energy. And for myself, someone who reacts to high frequency energy, whoo, I can tell you, it takes a lot out of you. Well, to recap a little bit here, so you have the opportunity to go and listen to these shows. In part one, let me grab my notes here. Missing persons, remote viewing. And then in part two, we get right into ghost children, Bigfoot encounters, and also the connection between Bigfoot and UFO sightings. And we were just getting to a good part when we had to stop. To recap a little bit about who we are speaking with, Ms. Jen Cruz, the lead investigator of the all-female Bigfoot experiment group research team called She Squatchers. They are located out of Minnesota. Jen also has a radio show along with her team members called The Journey, which can be heard every Wednesday evening on the Para-X Radio Network. As we were trying to finish up our episode, we had gotten into a number of different ideas and thoughts regarding Bigfoot, and we were just talking about these ghost lights, or these lights that might have a representation to Bigfoot. And so that is where we're going to pick up again as we finally finalize this episode this evening. But when you're dealing with somebody who is as gifted as Jen Cruz, would you stop at part one? Would you stop part two? I don't think so. But I think we both ran out of speed, to be quite honest. Without further ado, let's finish this interview tonight with Ms. Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. Stay tuned. Jen, welcome back to the show. Now, where were we? Oh, yes. I think we were talking about these ghost lights that seem to show up every time a Bigfoot is in the area.
I've actually encountered them quite a few times and over the years. Before I even was looking into Bigfoot, I was encountering lights and didn't necessarily always know what they were. My tribe calls them water spirit, and I have encountered those in the water. Those ones that they can be any color from fireball color to green, like the stoplight green, and then this bright neon blue.
Yep.
And, you know, there's also white ones, an occasional very rare pink. The ones that are fire engine red, those I would stay away from. Seem like they're angry. But, you know, I actually have video of one in the water that I encountered when I was in the water on my reservation.
When you encountered that, did you feel like it came up to you? Not came up to you. Did you feel,
yes.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at. It didn't attack you or anything. Did you feel differently by it being in your presence, and how close did it get to you?
Okay. So that is kind of a longer story. The first time that I encountered them, I was actually in a sweat lodge. I was going through my naming ceremony, and I didn't see them, but I heard singing, and the firekeeper who was manning the fire and bringing the rocks into the sweat lodge actually saw them and was kind of freaking out about it. He was telling my elder about these orange lights, these fireballs that came out of the lake and into the sweat lodge, and he kept telling him to shush. And he's like, I'm serious, I'm not the only one who saw them, and going on and on about it. And I finally just said, you know, what is going on? And he said that there were holes in the bottom of the lake, and sometimes there were 5 holes in the bottom of the lake, and sometimes they come up to see what we're doing. And then they came to attend my ceremony. They were attending my ceremony.
Interesting.
And I had heard singing outside the lodge, but there was only one man out there, and I was hearing many voices outside the lodge singing all around us. And that, for those who don't know what a sweat lodge is, it's a round dome shape made out of bent trees, and they put tarps over the top, so it's not like a solid wall, it's just a thick fabric, really, that's surrounding you from the outside. So he said that they had come to attend my ceremony. So that was my first encounter with that, but I didn't really understand what that was about. And then I had felt called. It was a weird experience that I had had looking into the river. This was actually the same time when I started dreaming about that thing that sunk into the river.
Yeah.
I had been at that river, and I was looking into the river, and I saw golden light people. And it was a weird experience, and they were calling me to come home. And I didn't understand what they meant. And it was kind of scary to me because I'd never had this experience before. And after that is when I started dreaming about about the thing that sunk in the river. It was that river. but they kept calling me to come home. And after that, I felt like this unconscious pull to go to the reservation. And which is where that river came from. I wasn't on the reservation when that happened, but the river comes from there. And I felt drawn to this particular location when I would look at it with Google Earth or a map. My eyes would always go to the same spot. And that was where I felt called to, always felt called to go there. And so I had been up there for a powwow. And my elder had assigned his son as my private security guard, because I was going to be running around by myself out there. And so I asked him if he'd ever been up to this one particular area on the lake, and he said he had. And I said, can we go up there? And he's like, well, I have to sleep, because he was working security all night. He'd been up all night. And I had made a bed in the back of my van for me to sleep in while I was camping up there. And he said, well, that looks really comfortable. I said, it is. He goes, well, I can take you up there, but can I nap in there while you're up there? And I said, sure, that's fine, as long as we can go up there. Because on that reservation, it's a closed reservation. You can't be a tribal member. You have to be a tribal member to just get out of the car and go off and off the road and do whatever. If they catch you off the road and out doing whatever and you're not a tribal member, they will kick you out.
Yeah.
And I wasn't at that time a tribal member. My mom was a tribal member, but I was not. So if I was going to be out there, I needed someone with me. So he said, yes, we went up there, I parked the car, he crawled in the back, and I went running to the beach, to down this beach, to the spot that I felt felt called to. And I went into the water. And I kneeled down into the water, so now the water is like up to my waist, mm-hmm. and the waves, it was windy that day, the waves were really coming in, moving me it almost felt like it was dancing with the waves.
Yep.
And I heard singing in my head, and not something I heard outside of me, I just heard this native song in my head. And I didn't understand the words, but I knew what it meant, and I started to sing it out loud. And as I did that, I knew that I was calling, the place where I was at is called the Narrows to the locals. It's just called the Narrows because it's where the lake comes together at the most narrow point. And it's at the most narrow point, it's a mile across. And I did not know that it was a sacred place to the people. I did not know that at that time. So now I'm in the water, and I'm hearing this song in my head. I start to sing the song, and I feel that I'm calling to the realm above and to the realm below to meet me in the middle here. And I knew that that's what the song meant, and I'm singing it, and I did a prayer. And I said, I asked for a sign, which I never did that. I never ever asked for a sign before. And just then an eagle flew out in front of me and landed in the tree behind me and was just sitting there looking at me. And that to me was my sign. I started to cry, just overwhelmed with feelings of, you know, being heard. I felt that I was being heard. And then I picked my head up and I looked just in time. I saw this fireball shoot out of the water across the other side of the Narrows, all the way on the other side. I saw it shoot up out of the water and fall back down, and then it was coming at me underneath the water, and it was moving very fast, and I didn't know what it was. I couldn't, in the moment of time that it took to reach me a mile away was the time that it took me to go, and it was all of a sudden right in front of me.
Oh, jeez.
That's how fast it moved. I just gasped one breath. And in that one breath moment of time, I was thinking, what is that? And the only thing I could think of is, it looks like a torpedo. That's
yeah, well, of course, it's going to knock you on your knees. What color was it? Did you say it was golden?
It was golden. Like, it was a fireball.
Yeah, like a fireball.
It looked like fire.
And how far did it stop? When it got to you that quickly, but did it stop or did it actually touch your body?
It stopped. It stopped as fast as it went. It just stopped. It's like a complete stop. It was just full speed stop.
Yeah.
And it was one hand, like if I reached my hand out, I think my fingertips could have touched it.
Yeah.
That's how close it was. And it was just there in front of me under the water a few inches. And the waves were waving, and it was just staying still where it was. And I was just frozen. I didn't know what to do. I just kept thinking, what is that? What's happening? What is this? I don't understand. And I was scared. I didn't know what it was. I had that initial, I'm scared. You know, what is this? And I was like, I'm very anti-fear. I'm always like trying to eliminate fear in my life. So I thought, okay, if that eagle is still in the tree behind me and looking at me, I'm going to know not to be afraid. So I'm going to look now for the eagle. And I turned and I looked, and the eagle was still sitting there looking at me.
Interesting.
I'm like, okay, don't be afraid. And so I started talking to it. And I was on the reservation. I introduced myself in the Ojibwe language out loud. All the spirit names that I was given in sacred ceremony. And I was given a lot of names. I was given all of my great-great-grandmother's names at once. And so I started rattling off my names. I said who my wa'a was, which is the one who named me. I said his name, and he was my wa'a. I started naming my ancestors and my clan, and it wiggled.
It wiggled?
It wiggled. And when it wiggled, I felt this, it was like I heard it say, yep, I know who you are.
Yeah. You're probably, are you sure it wasn't one of your ancestors?
Well, okay, so I didn't know at the time, and it was, yep, I know who you are, and I was like, okay, and so I was like, okay, and then it started to move, and as the fear left me more and more, it took a little while, it was circling me very slowly, and it was staying an arm's length away, but it was circling me, and it was going counterclockwise around me, all the way around me, and it kept circling me, and then it was going faster and faster and faster, and it was getting closer to me. And as it was as if I had a joy button, a volume button for my joy, it was turning it up, because it just, I felt joy. I mean, it was just like unbelievable levels of joy, unlike anything that I've ever felt as a human being. It was unbelievable, undescribable. And the faster it went, the more joy I felt. And it was getting closer, and I'm like, it's closer to me. And I'm kind of heavy-chested, so I can't see when I look straight down. But so I looked to my side to see how close it was getting to me now, because it was going so fast, it looked like a ring of fire.
Yeah.
It looked like a solid ring. It was going so fast. And I looked down, and I saw that it's almost touching my side. And then, all of a sudden, I was in my head, and I had started to experience a movie in my head. Where I was this little wild rice seed in this very native story. And it was like a movie in my head of this story. And I was living this life as a little wild rice seed hanging on top of a reed on top of the lake. And it was a very long, very intricate story about the life of the seed being taken by the wind and dropping into the water and being afraid and going down into the darkness and settling under the mud and screaming for help and nobody's hearing. And then you hear Mother Earth talking and it's okay now, child, reach for the light. And just so the seed starts growing and starts growing up into the water and up back up into the air. And, you know, it's this whole life cycle that I experienced in this very, very native story. And then I heard, now share the story, share the story. And then all of a sudden, it was over.
Interesting.
And I was supposed to share the story. And then I had this realization that I was supposed to be in the water with my elder son. He was supposed to be there with me. And he was sleeping in the car.
Yeah.
And so I ran out of the water. And I ran to the car, to the van. And I'm like, wake up!
Yeah. I'm sure he appreciated that, right?
Wake up! And I had a pair of shorts that I had, they were men's shorts, but I wore them to bed because they were comfortable. They were these slinky men's shorts or whatever. I grabbed my shorts that I would normally wear to sleep, and I threw them at him, and I said, put these on, you come into the water. He's like, what? And I was trying to tell him something happened, you're supposed to come. And we went running back to the water, and he comes in the water with me, and I said, say a prayer. And he's like, what? And I said, tell them your Indian name. And he's like, and he was trying to.
Yeah.
But, and he was stuttering it. And he's like, maybe you could do it for me. He didn't speak Ojibwe very well. And I was shocked by that because this is my elder's son. And he's like, my elder was like the head spiritual advisor for the whole tribe.
Oh.
I was like, what do you mean you can't say
your name? Say your name. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so I tried to introduce him by introducing, this is the son of Gichimayang and da da da, you know. And, nothing happened.
Yeah.
And
it was gone, right? It left, right?
Yeah. Well, I thought it had. I didn't know what it was. And then all of a sudden we hear the drums and across the water, which means it's powwow was starting. And I had walked into that water between 8:30 and 9 o'clock in the morning. And it felt like 20 minutes had gone by to me.
Hmm.
And so we went back to the powwow grounds and I went and found his dad and I told him what happened. And he said, already? Are you ready for this? I said, am I ready for what? He goes, well, I always knew that this would happen. I knew they'd come to you, but I didn't think they'd come this soon. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Like, am I ready for what? I don't understand what happened. And I still didn't understand what happened. And you know, he was my guide. He was my mentor. He was my wa'a. And he would tell me things. And sometimes he talked in what I called old Indian guy talk, which was very confusing to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he would answer my question with what seemed more like a riddle or something that I just really didn't understand. It was so foreign to me. And he just said that he always knew that they would come to me even before that he met me. He knew they'd come to me. And that he had it told me at a different time that they were connected to my family. They were connected to my family.
Interesting. So were you out there by yourself, but this gentleman that brought you there, was he sleeping in his van somewhere? I can't remember. I was trying to remember.
Yeah, he was sleeping in my van.
In your van. And your son was in there as well.
No, his son.
His son was in the van.
Oh, just my elder son. It was your just me and him.
Okay. And so it was just you standing in, is it, do you want to call it a lake? Is that what it is?
In a lake.
And basically having this experience, but you're experiencing this. How far away were they compared to where you were standing in this lake?
Oh, maybe a couple hundred feet.
Okay. So basically, and was this, again, did you say morning or night?
It was morning.
Morning, when this was happening and you could actually see this stuff going on. I just find, go ahead.
It was about the size of a basketball.
That's what I was going to ask. What size was this? And it didn't touch you or burn you or anything like that?
It did touch me. When it touched me, I started having a movie. It didn't hurt at all. It was like overwhelming joy and love. Unlike anything you would ever experience. And it was really life-changing, to be honest with you. I had gone back there many times and gone into the water. I love going into the water. And another time that I was there, I walked into the water up to my ankles only, and I was just... I was further down towards the point area than where I had actually had this experience. And I was standing there, and I was videoing with my cell phone because I wanted to make a guided meditation video. And I thought this would be a really good background with the waves coming in. So I was just standing very quietly filming the waves. And it was such a bright day. I couldn't see what I was capturing on my camera. I was just pointing it at the waves.
Right.
And all of a sudden I hear... point your camera down and to the left and you'll catch me on the video. So I did. I pointed it down and to the left and just held it there and couldn't see what I was capturing on the video. It was too bright outside. And then pretty soon he comes by and says, it's time to go. So we left. And I forgot about it. I didn't even think about it. I never watched the video. Never even watched it. It was just weird. And it was about a year or two later. I sat up straight in the middle of the night. I sat up and I said, I got to watch that video that I took, and I remembered it and see what I didn't see before. And during that time period, I had been asking my elder questions about that experience, and he was not answering me. He would just avoid the question altogether, and I was mad at him. I was aggravated with him that he wouldn't answer my questions because I had feelings about what had happened and I didn't understand it, and I wanted to understand, and he just wasn't answering it. And so I was annoyed and upset with him over that. Then when I remembered this video and I went to it and I saw it, it was in the video. It ran around in the water right in front of me on the video. And I sent it to him in an email and I said, do you have any answers for me now?
Yeah, I know. I've been waiting a couple years here. What is now? The answer? What's going on?
Yeah, how about now? You got anything to say now? How about now? And, you know, he knew I was frustrated with him. He knew I was upset with him because he wasn't answering me. And then he answered two emails about it. Two emails. He said, this happened before you were ready for it. That's why you don't remember what happened. Mm-hmm. I lost hours there. He says, it happened before you were ready. That's why you don't remember it. And this video is the answer to the question that you've been asking me for the last 2 years. They gave you the answer themselves. And the fact that you remember it now means that you're ready to know.
Okay, so now tell us what it is.
Well, just that they were with me.
So now my question goes to, since you had that experience, your gifts, even stronger or about the same?
I've been stronger along the way. Yeah, I think stronger. And, what's really interesting is now I have this video. And I would pause it at spots because they move so fast they're hard to see.
Yeah.
And so I'd pause it and take screenshots of it. Pause, take screenshot. And you can see it goes right through physical things and went right through the reeds.
Yeah.
Right through them.
Yeah.
And they're sentient beings.
Yeah.
They definitely are sentient beings. And I don't, when I had first saw the golden people in the river, I knew that I was them. And I forgot about being human and I didn't know anything about dying.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing. And he did tell me at one point that they were connected to my family. But not human. And so it's very, very interesting. But he was saying that he knew that they would, he always knew that they would come to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even before he met me, he knew they would come to me.
Interesting.
And
not UFO in nature.
No. They come from inside the earth in the water.
Okay. Well, and the reason why I ask that, or the reason why I say that, people have had reports, fireball type things flying out of the water, not necessarily maybe that color, but who knows, flying out of it. And so then equating that with a UFO alien/experience, thinking that the aliens are also underneath the water. And that's why I was asking if you think that this is more of an energy, like I want to call it your family, basically. Energies of your family line, relatives, elders, whomever, versus, you know, alien-like. I would assume that's what you're telling me, is that completely different here, correct?
It's okay. This is hard to explain because when I first met my elder, he was questioning me on, and my mother, he was questioning us both on things that he wanted us to tell him. And my mom said, "We don't know the answer to that." And he looked at her and he said, "You do know." And he looked at me, he said, "She doesn't know, but you do." And he kept drilling my mom, "What is your clan? What is your location clan? What is your location clan? Where do you come from?" And my mom's like, "I don't know, I don't know, I don't know." And then she said it, and he said, "That's it." And he said, and he just clapped his hands, and he smiled, and he sat back, and he said, "You," because I'm sitting there with a pen and paper writing down the things that he's telling us, right? And he said, "You write this down." He said, "You are a little rock from the stone man. That's where you come from." And another, because when he started saying this, he said, "I need to know what you are." What? I am? What do you mean, what am I?
Yeah, exactly. What am I?
Yeah. And there was a lot of weird things that happened where he was introducing me to people and they'd either be really formal and look at me like I was a ghost and be like, "Oh, it's a great honor to meet you."
Oh, jeez.
Or they'd be looking at me like I was going to squash them like a bug and they'd run away. And my mom's like, "Why are they treating you funny?" I'm like, "I don't know, Mom. And I don't know what's going on." And she'd jump in and she says, I'm from that family too. I'm her mom." And they wouldn't even look at her.
Interesting. But they were very, very intrigued by you, huh?
Yeah. And so, you know, putting it all together later, I come to and interviewing other elders. My elder has since passed away. He passed away within 3 weeks of that moment of him emailing me the answer.
Oh, geez.
He passed away very suddenly without any warning whatsoever. And so I think that they let me have that confirmation from him before he died. I think that I needed that. Because this stuff was seeming so crazy to me that I was having a hard time accepting it, if that makes sense.
Well, the thing is we all want to find answers. We all keep looking for answers, right? And sometimes if for those that are most connected to it or have more exposure to it or literally from the line of it, of course it's only natural that you're going to want to know what the heck is happening to me and why is it happening to me and why is it happening to me now and what am I to gain from this, et cetera. That's why I was wondering if your gifts after that point had even strengthened more, because I've always been told, and whether it's right or not, that when you have encounters of certain degrees, especially with what you experienced out there, the question ultimately is what did that do? I wish they would help you with your heart, honestly, but the thing is that, you know, you wonder where this is all supposed to go and what lessons or what you're supposed to learn from all this. So, and how long ago did that occur, Jen?
In the water was 2010.
So that was almost 11 years ago.
And what's interesting is you say you wish that they would help me with my heart. I'm just going to tell you that I think that they do, because at that time that happened, when the doctors did an ultrasound of my heart and all that, they said that I had the heart of an 80-year-old.
Oh.
And that they expected they didn't think I was going to live. They said, "If you leave the hospital outside of a body bag," which we don't think is going to happen, they were really that blunt to my mother and I. And we just looked at each other like, "What?" And he said, "If you get to leave here alive," he said, "you will be wearing a life vest, which will have paddles to shock you back to life, because you are at serious risk of just dropping dead. Your heart is only working at 20%. This is the second time a virus has attacked your heart. It will not heal."
It will not heal. Is there any way you could go to the lake, stand in it, and ask for healing?
That's what he said. It will not heal. if it does, maybe 30%. It was the most that they thought that they could get for me with medication, because they'd gone into my heart and looked around. I had no blockages. They said if they had found a blockage, they could open it up and I'd feel much better already. But there was nothing. I had nothing growing in there, no blockages forming whatsoever. That my heart was completely damaged from this virus. And other organs too, like my liver was damaged. There was a lot of organ damage, but mostly to my heart and to my liver. And I had this life vest that I wore when I left there with the paddles to shock me back to life. I had to wear that for 3 months before my insurance would approve the surgery to get a defibrillator implant.
Yeah.
And so I went back for my next test before my defibrillator implant, and my heart had healed to 35%.
Okay.
Which they said was not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it continued to heal from that point. So I didn't get a defibrillator. It continued to heal, and it's still continuing to heal. It's slow but sure, but it's healing. And they said they didn't think it could happen, and it is happening. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think that I am being helped with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've been healing from things that they said could not happen.
How often do you go back to that lake?
Well, with COVID, we haven't been allowed to go back because they closed the border.
Yeah.
Oh. They won't let people in.
Oh, this is up in Canada?
No. They closed the border to the reservation.
Oh, gotcha. Yep. Yep.
And they won't let people. But I've been back up there, but I didn't get to the lake. I had to go back. I've since become a tribal member. I'm now an enrolled tribal member. And I had to go up there to get my ID done. It looks like a driver's license. It's a federal ID. I had to go up there and get that done. So I went to the government building, but I wasn't able to get to the lake.
Interesting. Well, you know, I'm going to have to definitely touch base with you again at some point. You have done what we call part one, part two, and hopefully not part three here, but we have absolutely, I mean, I could talk to you all afternoon, my God. And I find this very, very interesting, just all your experiences in general. I feel you're a very gifted individual who has been going through a journey, just unbelievable, and just the things that you've gone through. And sometimes I would ask myself the question, you know, of course we do, and I don't know if you've ever asked yourself the question, why me, or if you've just basically come to terms with the fact that it's all part of essentially your bloodline, essentially. But I hope that in the end here, your heart will keep you ticking for a while, because we would sure hate to lose such a treasure and such a gift that has graced us on our planet here. And so, Jen, why don't you tell people a little bit about how your show, and if you have any books out and or appearances that you'd like to talk about, and if people want to get a hold of you, what would you advise on that?
Well, I have a website, shesquatchers.com, and there's a contact us button there that can email me anything you'd like to ask or whatever. We also have an event page that shows the events we're going to be scheduled at this year. And so we've got some coming up in Nebraska. We're going to be at the Nebraska Bigfoot Conference April 23rd and 24th. And that'll be a really fun time. There's actually a Bigfoot researcher coming from Moscow for that event. So that's going to be really awesome. Ken Gerhardt is going to be there too. He's an author. And a big, you know, people like to see him as well. So we'll be speaking there. Then we have other events. We've got the Virginia Bigfoot Conference in June. We've got Reamer Bigfoot Days in Minnesota, which isn't a conference. It's just a gathering in July. At the end of July, we're going to be at the Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Conference, which is in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And that's a really big one. They're still announcing the speakers. We haven't been announced yet, but they're announcing a speaker a day now, starting yesterday. We will be announced one of these days, but we're actually one of the speakers, and the whole lineup is really exciting, actually. And in October, we'll be at the Yakima Valley Bigfoot Conference in Toppenish, Washington. So that'll be cool. So if anybody's going to, in those areas, come out and see us. We'd love to meet you. We have a show on Wednesday nights on the Parax Radio Network. It's called The Journey. It's on at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. And, of course, we record the video of our show and upload it to our YouTube channel at She Squatchers Official right after the show as well. So you can check out our past shows there. And, yeah. So So that's where you can reach me.
Thank you so very much, Jen, for all of your time and your experiences and your thoughts. And for those of you who haven't listened to part one or part two yet, please go back and listen to those episodes, because it all leads up to this moment right now. And you're asking, well, what is this moment right now? Well, this moment right now is, I think we need to have just a little bit of a discussion about sentient beings, and then also move that into what at least one form of aliens may be thinking. Stay tuned.
Demons, vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come. Get lost with us.
Welcome back. Well, in my discussion with Jen in parts 1, 2, and 3, something was striking me during some points of our conversations that I hadn't really thought about before. So I thought I would look up a few things as usual and bring to you some additional thinking or some thought-provoking ideas here where maybe you and I together can put some pieces together. And that topic, of course, is sentient beings. So up until this point, when you work in the paranormal field or when you investigate or do your little mini investigations, a lot of times the terminology you know starts to expand rather rapidly once you start understanding through individuals who have more direct experience with things, with aspects, you know, with situations. It just helps your thinking expand and grow. And Jen had brought up in the, I believe it was this part right here, that she had had contact with a sentient being, and that this occurred at the waterfront or at the lake where she stood into it and had this experience with this glowing, golden, like basketball-shaped type orb energy, okay? And she referred to that as a sentient being. Well, let's break this down a little bit here. So what is a sentient being? All right, well, first of all, in order to be a sentient being, you have to have a consciousness, all right? And then the consciousness or this being is comprised usually of like 5 different subparts. One being matter, has the ability to have a sensation. In other words, it can feel. Has a perception. In other words, we're relating that to some form of intelligence. Has a memory or the ability to have a mental function. In other words, along with intelligence, it has the ability to be somewhat logical. And it also has, of course, this consciousness. Those are the 5 parts of making up a sentient being. It says here that not all sentient beings are everything in general. Some people would argue, well, is a tree a sentient being because it can feel? Or no, not exactly. Are some bugs sentient beings, even down to the littlest being, even smaller than an ant? Some would debate yes, no on that. So, for example, some animals, such as dogs and perhaps cats, and other animals, by the way, can be sentient beings if they show their matter is their form, the ability to be sensitive in some way, have emotion, have a perception, linking it also to hindsight, logic, intelligence. And then, of course, mental function in order to be able to make decisions, of course, and then the consciousness of just actually putting itself together as one being. But the researchers would argue that bugs and sponges are often not sentient beings. And when we talk about sponges, they're talking about those types of sponges that are found in the water, okay? And so some of this stuff can be debated, and it always is debated, and that's what makes our world so complete, doesn't it? So the ability to feel, perceive, and maybe experience a form of thinking. All right, let's move this one step ahead here. So it says here, and I pulled this article here on animal ethics, what beings are not conscious? Okay, well, includes bacteria, looks like some fungi, says some certain plants and certain animals. All right, and then it says here that there's the possibility that a number of animals with a very simple centralized nervous system might fall borderline into that, but also may not be a sentient either. So it opens up more questions, and of course that's what makes our world go round. What else does this article have to say? Well, basically it has to have some kind of a structure. That's what it's talking about here. And a consciousness, to be conscious, the ability to, it says, through positive and negative stimuli to engage in or abstain from increasing or motivating the behavior. All right. It says here, therefore, it would make no sense for beings who lack the ability to engage in a behavior, if they do not have the capacity to feel, may not fall into this category. For example, they talk about plants who can't just run away, or forage that just can't leave when something is chewing on it. The researchers say that the stimuli, this kind of stimuli, would not serve no purpose for them to run away or to move away, and it would be an unnecessary expenditure of energy. Okay. Alrighty. So let me see if there's anything else here before we get into the next level on sentient beings. Essentially, it's got to have a nervous system. A nervous system that does more than just exist. All right. And again, it goes on and on about animals and types of forms out there. Let's move this into this other. This one is an actual scientific journal article that I found, dated in 2012 from the author Shelley Thompson. The article is actually called On the Frontier of Knowledge, A Discussion of Alien Civilizations. So I read this article, and for those of you who would be interested, just type in your Google bar, On the Frontier of Knowledge, A Discussion of Alien Civilizations, or put in the author Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y, Thompson, T-H-O-M-S-O-N, and see what you think, okay? So I was thumbing through, you're going to hear me whipping through pages here, but one of the things that people are not sure of is when there's a Bigfoot in the area or a Bigfoot encounter, whether that Bigfoot has any association or connection with aliens or elementals. And whether or not, by the way, there's that connection of being able to figure out if these fairy lights have anything to do with Bigfoot in general. All right, so let's look at this article here. I highlighted some things here because I thought it would be interesting to just bring it forth to you. This researcher's goal, I guess, was to do a study of comparisons of what she knew to be out there. Okay. In this article, she does talk about the fact that there are various alien types of groups, but that she had more information on one type of group than another. And so let me go ahead here, just bring out some of the statements that she writes, and not to pull it out of context, but she says, the demand that our universe order itself in line with our ability to perceive only one reality at a time is unreasonable. Okay, what she's saying there, I believe, we're not alone. Okay, that's simple. Short, simple, sweet. Objective of her study was to learn about technology deployed by advanced alien species. And I'm going to read this. As the study progressed, the objective was to broaden to include alien attitudes toward the human species and their intentions with respect to the Earth, and then the challenge of communication and a strategy by which it may be achieved, observations of their technology, and some options available to humanity in dealing with what is called alien colonizers. All right, so she's trying to set the scene here. I think she's looking at, although she's trying to look at more than one group, I think she honed in on essentially one specific group where she had information or more information on these beings. So to make a comparison between humans and aliens, of course, she goes on to list different types of characteristics that you have heard about and as well as I on how they can look and also their types or their form of intelligence and how they use their intelligence, if you even want to term it like that. And then also she talks about how in some cases they can be, of course, technologically advanced. Well, I think we've understood that. And I think sometimes we're learning a little bit from each other. So here's a comparison here. She says, with respect to comparative intelligence, humans are not very bright. Well, duh. Okay, so anyway, what she's getting at here is that advanced alien societies seem to display performances superior to human society, that humans may produce some bright individuals, but that not all individuals that appear to be bright are in some of are the ones making some of our most important decisions in our world. And we, as a society, humans, seem to assign no special value to intelligence, but rather we seem to look upon and look up to traits such as wealth, physical beauty, and athletic proudness or the ability to be very athletic. Okay, that seems to be what we run after. That's what she's saying. I would agree with that, by the way. Just understanding, you know, when it comes down to really, really important decisions about things, though, and especially with the well-being of our society, I have to say that intelligence probably at that point, or someone who's very compelling and convincing, is who we look after over and beyond those. She says human beings are actually capable of a form of cooperation in which individuality is not sacrificed and assets such as experience, knowledge, and intelligence are additive. Yes, I agree with that. So let me see here. There are some striking differences between individualization and also the distribution of intelligence. And she refers to these aliens as colonizers, which may be a form of collective consciousness. But there's one big contrast here regarding alien species that kind of separate them at this time in comparison to humans. And one of those things, of course, is originality and flexibility. That's one thing, okay? And it's also a matter of self-awareness. That's another thing, right? So are aliens aware of each other or themselves, or do they care? That's what she's really getting at. She says, these studies find no basis for popular memes such as human-alien hybrids, aliens walking among us in disguise, aliens and humans working together in underground bases, treaties between human governments and aliens, and of course, anything beyond that. So she said, during these studies, the following insights emerged. Human interaction is strongly oriented toward parent-child relationships, mating, male rivalry, and defense of the family. I would agree with that. Perhaps the most true function of emotions is to organize our behavior around our biological relationships, where aliens lack these biological and social relationships entirely. They cannot be parents, children, lovers, brothers, or even enemies to us. Human beings must not bring these attitudes to the negotiating table, simply because what she's saying here is they don't get it. All right, that's what she's saying. So when we talk about human-alien hybrids, exactly what are we talking about? I have talked with a few individuals who believe they are hybrids. I believe that they are hybrids. However, what components in them make them a hybrid? And then they were very specific with certain things about themselves that made them stand out a little bit differently than the regular human person, such as the way their skull looks, okay, when they've had MRIs or scans of them done. So this is why this individual here is arguing against the fact that that can exist, because in a nutshell, aliens here don't know how to essentially feel. That's really what she's saying. So when we talk about sentient beings, we're talking about something that can feel. And when we're talking about fairy lights, we're talking about something that can what? Can feel. And it's very possible. You know, according to Jen, she had a reaction from a sentient being that came up to her in this lake and essentially reacted when she talked about something. And that reaction in itself showed emotion, and it showed all kinds of things that made it look actually quite intelligent. I wish I had more time to talk about the fact that aliens are mining our resources, but that kind of gets off topic here a little bit, because we're just trying to get down to the fact of whether or not aliens are sentient beings in and of themselves. The one thing the military, though, is very, very careful about, according to this article, is not to open fire on aliens. And the reason why is because we don't know what they will do back. If they're mimicking in any what way to do back to us what we just did to them, that would be a very bad move. And that's why you don't often hear of the military, or at least you don't hear of it, trying to attack or remove some of these alien invaders, I guess. We'd like to call them visitors, but sometimes we're pretty much thinking that they're invaders into our population. How do we not know that we're not the invader into theirs? So, long story short, communication with intelligent species require the ability to carry on an intelligent conversation. Intelligent beings do not reason contrary to fact, and again, aliens may not have that ability to be that logical or go to that limit of reasoning. They may have just one line of thinking, and again, humans may take our errors for granted, but aliens, apparently, according to this article, has no tolerance for error. And I wanted to quickly bring up the blinking lights, and then I'm going to have to end because we're moving into trouble time here. So it says that when humans blink flashlights at UFOs, okay, and this has removed optical signals from the list in which ways humans communicate intelligently. Sometimes, she says, the UFOs blink back, all right? But that's not significant. She says, in all probability, human light blinking is considered something on the relationship to like fireflies flashing to attract mates. Nothing resembling an intelligent conversation ever ensues. So she says that this technology has been or is becoming to be disabled as a medium of communication with aliens, just for the simple fact that technically they may not understand why we're blinking anything at them to begin with. And of course, we're not certainly soliciting to be a mate, are we? Thank you so much for listening to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. As always, thank you, Jen, I hope to bring you some more interesting guests in the future. And I hope to bring you some more interesting articles as well. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.